Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Hello and welcome to this draft edition of the Next Fan Up podcast. It's Pod Vader here. No super fans this week. Sorry about that. They did ask some questions, so they're here, in spirit, if not in person. But I have a great interview this week with DraftCountdown.com's Scott Wright. We're going to talk a little bit about the upcoming NFL draft. We are in draft season. It's his regular season now. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that. We're going to talk a little bit about the upcoming combine as well. That's coming up next week. So we're going to want to talk a little bit about what to watch for when you're watching the combine unfold on the NFL Network. But we got lots of good stuff here coming at you. If you haven't heard the show from this past weekend, the Superfans did get together and redrafted last year's first round. Find out if your team still picked the same player that they had. Most likely they didn't, but there were still quite a number of first round players drafted once again in the first round. So you're going to want to check that out. And if you missed it, all you need to do is go to iTunes and check out the archive. If you subscribe, you won't miss a show. Leave us a review. It helps us get more listeners to the podcast. And of course, we want you to tell all your friends about the show. Share it with a friend, because what's better than the NFL than sharing the NFL. On that note, let's just jump right into things. It's my pleasure now, as we enter into the off season of the NFL. It is this man's regular season of the NFL, and I am talking about Scott Wright of DraftCountdown.com, and of course, he has the podcast of the same name. Hello, Scott.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Hey, you know, we were just talking right before we started that we got to talk to you more often during the season. Like, we can't just hold you until this portion of the year.
Yeah, because it really is a year-round process. In fact, I was just talking to someone the other day, and, well, we're all focusing on the 2017 NFL draft. That's a couple of months away, 64 days to be exact. NFL scouts are already looking at 2018. They're on the road getting info on top seniors for next year. So it really is a year-round process.
And that's sort of an interesting point to talk a little bit about. I know it was a bigger deal has been made out of this, you know, in earlier years, but there are more and more underclassmen jumping into the draft now too.
Yeah, last year we had a record. I believe it was 108. This year it came to 103. Technically, the NFL announced 95, but there were eight guys that graduated and they came out even though they had eligibility remaining. But really, it's right around that 100 mark has been where we've been for a number of years now, and that's kind of the usual now. And a lot of the guys are making mistakes. And you can never criticize. You don't know all the circumstances, but I just look at it from the perspective of, did these guys maximize their draft stock? Could they have gone higher a year from now? And as always, there's a number of guys like that out there this year. For example, this year, Noah Brown, a wide receiver from Ohio State, came out as a redshirt sophomore, was never really the featured target in that passing attack, would have been next year had he gone back. And I kind of compare his situation to that of Martavis Bryant, where you look at him, and on paper, in terms of potential, you can make an argument for first round, but he just hasn't put it all together yet. But so you might be able to get a first-round talent in the third or fourth round in Noah Brown of Ohio State. So you know, that's just one example, but there's a wide range of underclassmen, from the no-brainers that came out, the ones that made huge mistakes, but ultimately you're going to see dozens of these guys not be drafted at all.
You know, that's a good point too, that you bring up about getting first round talent in later rounds. That's what makes some of the best organizations even better, is when they are able to draft in that style. As I'm looking at your rankings, there's one guy that sticks out to me pretty quickly. And it's a position that isn't normally up at the top of the chart. And that's Leonard Fournette, the running back from LSU. Is he really the second best player in this year's draft?
Leonard Fournette is special, and I'm really stingy with my elite grade. This year, only two guys are getting it. And one is Myles Garrett, the defensive end from Texas A&M, who's going to be the number one overall pick. And then Fournette's the second. And personally, philosophically, if I ran an NFL team, I would never invest a first-round pick in a running back, just because I feel like you have this finite pile of resources. I don't want to give a big chunk to running back when I know I can get maybe not 100% of the production, maybe 80% for 10% of the cost in the later rounds, especially this year where you have so much depth at running back. But with that said, Fournette, one of the very few guys who could make me think twice. I think he's a better prospect coming out than Ezekiel Elliott was, than Todd Gurley was. And it's kind of sacrilegious to compare anybody to Adrian Peterson, but Fournette's probably as close as it gets in terms of the freakish size, blend of size, speed, power. It's the old saying, he'll run over linebackers and run away from cornerbacks. Leonard Fournette is special, and he's going to be a top 10 pick. I think he should be top 5, and I think he'd be a great fit in that Jacksonville Jaguars offense.
You know, a lot of other talk right now, of course, and always seems to be surrounding around the, quote, most important position in football, and that being quarterback. And I think a lot of that talk is because a lot of you guys, I'm gonna point my finger at you as you guys, don't think that there's a franchise quarterback out there in this year's draft.
No, there isn't. I think there's guys with that type of potential. But they're just not there yet. They're undercooked. And my top-rated quarterback in this class is DeShone Kizer from Notre Dame, who came out as a redshirt sophomore. Struggled at times this past season, arguably looked better in his first season as a starter, but all of the tools are there in terms of the size, the intelligence, the arm strength, the athleticism. All the pieces are in place. He just needs some polish. So to me, Kizer's the top quarterback in this draft. I have him just outside of the top 10. And if you're going to take a quarterback in the top 10 this year, he's the guy I would make that investment in. And there's no shortage of teams in the top 10 that need quarterbacks. In fact, about half of them. You look at the Browns, the 49ers, the Bears, the Jets, the Bills. So it's just a matter of when a team is going to feel comfortable starting that run. But Kizer's my top guy. A lot of people feel it's Mitch Trubisky from North Carolina. People say Kizer's inexperienced with only 2 years as a starter. Trubisky only had 1 year as a starter. So there again, all the tools seem to be there, but I kind of have a similar grade on Trubisky as I did on Blake Bortles coming out. And I guess you can do that positively or negatively. Bortles wound up going number 3 overall and has shown some flashes in the NFL, but I thought he was overdrafted. And if Trubisky goes in the top 10, I think that would be a stretch, especially if he doesn't measure quite as big as he's listed at the combine. They listed him at 6'3". There's some rumors that he's going to come in that 6'1" range, which would put him in company with the Rex Grossmans and Johnny Manziels of the world in terms of quarterbacks that size going in round 1, which I think is a little bit concerning. DeShone Watson from Clemson, incredible college career. Doesn't necessarily do anything really well, does everything pretty well, but my concern with Watson is health and durability. With his style of play, if he doesn't alter it, I just don't think he's going to hold up physically at the next level, and I could see him going down a similar road to Robert Griffin III. And then the real wild card in terms of the top quarterback is Patrick Mahomes from Texas Tech, who might be the most talented of all the signal callers in this draft in terms of the size, the athleticism, has a big-time arm, can make all of the throws, just comes from a very unorthodox offense there. It's going to be a huge adjustment for him, and he's a gunslinger. He's wild. He's like an untamed stallion. You think of Brett Favre back in his early days. That's kind of what you see in Patrick Mahomes. But if everything clicks and he goes to the right situation, he could be the best quarterback to come out of this draft. So that's kind of how I view the top two tiers. Kizer, then a drop-off, then Trubisky, Watson, Mahomes are all kind of that late round one, early to mid round two range for me.
How many quarterbacks do you think will go in the first round?
I think we're going to see 3. I think we're going to see Kizer and Trubisky, and then I think somebody's going to take Watson later in the first round. But then I think we're going to see a couple more go later on the second day, whether it's Brad Kaya from Miami and Florida, and Davis Webb from California is an interesting player too. He transferred from Texas Tech to Cal, where he replaced Jared Goff, the number 1 overall pick in last year's draft. Had a good season, and he's facing some of those questions about the system he played in, kind of adjusting to a pro-style offense, but there's teams that really like him, and he was coached up at the Senior Bowl by the Cleveland Browns, really dedicated to the game. He showed up in Mobile for the Senior Bowl 2 days before everyone else to start preparing and throwing with some receivers. So don't be surprised if Davis Webb from Cal is a player that one of these quarterback needy teams take on that second day, whether it be round 2 or round 3.
You know, one of my favorite tabs, and frankly, They're all my favorite tabs at draftcountdown.com. But the one that I really enjoyed looking at is your over-under, the overrated and the underrated players in this draft. And if we're going to stick with the quarterback here, you've got Nathan Peterman from Pittsburgh there. What do you like about Nathan's game?
Yeah, and an underrated prospect and arguably the top senior signal caller in what is obviously a weak crop of senior signal callers. But I think in this draft where we're talking about all these underclassmen, the top four, my top four quarterbacks are all underclassmen with varying degrees of experience. If you're looking for more cost certainty, I think Peterman's going to be that guy on day two that teams could look at. I question how much upside he has. I think the best case you might be getting an Andy Dalton type of quarterback in the ultimate best case scenario, and even that might be a stretch. But Nathan Peterman, he might not have as high of a ceiling, but he's got a much higher floor. So at the very least with Peterman, I think you feel like you're getting a solid backup signal caller, which is a pretty valuable position these days. So I think Peterson's going to come off the board somewhere round three, round four, round five. That's going to be his range. And he's got a lot of fans in the scouting community, so I wouldn't be surprised to see him come off, be selected in maybe the higher end of that range, and maybe even come off the board ahead of one or two signal callers that have quote-unquote higher profiles.
I've heard, again, from you people, that the strongest position in the draft, just to rewind it back, is the running back position. Is that true, or do you think there's another position that might represent a little better in this year's draft?
It's right there. It's in the top three. I could also make an argument for cornerback and tight end. I think there's a lot of depth at both of those positions as well. But running back, of those 100 or so underclassmen we talked about that came out, 19 of those were running backs. So to say they bolstered the talent and depth in this runner class would be an understatement. And this is the type of year where you're going to get running backs maybe a round or two later than you should have. You're going to get third round values in the fifth round. You're going to get fifth round values in the seventh round. And that's why I talked about earlier. If I ran a team, I just wouldn't make that first round investment in a runner. And I think this year is a perfect example. You're going to be able to get a starting caliber running back well into the third day of the draft. It'll be round four, round five. And there's going to be some big names that fall that far. A couple that I kind of like in that range, I think Deontay Foreman from Texas could still be available in the back end of that top 100, a big power runner out of Texas. I really like Samaje Perine out of Oklahoma, who isn't the most impressive physical specimen, but he's almost like a ball of knives, really tough to tackle, super productive as a runner and a ball carrier. But the wild card in this running back class is going to be Joe Mixon from Oklahoma, who is not going to be at the scouting combine. He wasn't invited due to a prior off-the-field incident. But you can make an argument that after Leonard Fournette, he's right there battling Dalvin Cook from Florida State to be the number two running back in this draft. And if you took off-the-field character questions off the table, he'd be getting talked about as a first-round player. Joe Mixon is that talented. And there's been speculation he could go undrafted out completely. But, you know, I've been doing this long enough that I always err on the side of talent. And I know that if you're talented enough, teams are going to give you chances. And I've seen less talented players who've done worse things still go where they should in the draft. So I think ultimately Joe Mixon is going to come off the board in the second or third round when all is said and done. But wherever it is, it's going to be a value from a talent standpoint. And you could get one of the two or three best running backs in this draft, even though he's the sixth or seventh one off the board.
You know, as I was looking at, and I was going to sort of think about the weakest part of the draft, as I was looking at your top 32, noticed you have five Alabama players in your top 11. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's almost like Nick Saban knows what he's doing down there, right? it's definitely not a coincidence. We definitely see a correlation almost every year between the top teams in college football and the teams that produce the most pro talent. And Alabama has been routinely one of them for a number of years. And we're going to be hearing that Crimson Tide fight song early and often this year, even more so than we did a year ago, because the reason they're so stacked is they had two or three guys that might have been first round picks a year ago that went back for their senior year, whether it be Jonathan Allen, the defensive lineman, Tim Williams, the pass rusher, Reuben Foster, the linebacker, O.J. Howard, the tight end. So really, those are four top 50 picks from last year's draft that carried over to this year. So that's part of the reason Alabama is so stacked.
And it does make it an easy transition to the weakest position in the draft, because I hear that the offensive line is that weak spot, which is a shame, because it seems like about 90% of the NFL has a bad offensive line. And the number one offensive lineman you have in your rankings is Cam Robinson from Alabama.
Yeah, this is a lackluster crop of offensive tackles, although I'm a lot higher on Robinson than most. And he's one of those guys, when he was playing as a true freshman, I was evaluating other Alabama players, and he kept flashing to me, not only as a pass protector and a run blocker, he just kept popping off the screen. This is a talented kid with 3 years of experience against elite competition. There's some speculation, is he going to be more of a right tackle? Might he have to kick inside to guard? Regardless where he ends up, I think he's going to be a 10-year solid starter, but I think he's capable of playing left tackle, and to me, he's one of the top dozen players in this draft. But then it drops off. Then you have a couple of guys in Garrett Bowles from Utah and Ryan Ramczyk from Wisconsin, both big, talented kids, but only 1 year of experience at the Division I level for varying reasons. So this is not a great year if you need a stud offensive tackle, and I think that's going to increase the value of some of the guys that are open out there on the open market free agency, whether it be a Rick Wagner or Riley Reiff, players like that. But with that said, even though tackle is lackluster, it's a really good crop of offensive guards. I think you have two interior blockers in Forrest Lamp from Western Kentucky and Dan Feeney from Indiana, who you can make a legitimate case as first-round talents. And then depth as well, Dorian Johnson from Pitt, Taylor Moten from Western Michigan. So if you're looking for offensive line help this offseason of the NFL, get your tackles in free agency, get your guards in the draft.
You can never go wrong with a good OG. I just like saying OG. Speaking of OGs, my guy Neil, who's our Redskins super fan, usually has the best questions, especially when it comes to draft time. And we've answered almost all of them except for one. And it was his number one question. And that is, Jabril Peppers is drafted number ...
Well, that's going to be one of the big storylines of this draft. I think Jabril Peppers is going to go down as one of this year's most polarizing prospects. And in my most recent mock draft, I have him going number 17 to the Washington Redskins. So kind of right in the middle of where his range is going to be. And the first thing you have to decide is, where are you going to play him? Is he a safety or is he an outside linebacker? He's only about 6 feet, about 200, 210 pounds. You're going to bulk him up and play him as a linebacker. He's such an incredible athlete. Even though he's so fast and rangy, he didn't really make a lot of plays on the ball during his college career in terms of the interceptions, but when he does get the ball in his hands, he is dynamic to the point where there's some teams that feel his best position in the NFL might even be running back. But regardless whether he plays offense or defense, safety, linebacker, running back, he's also going to be an outstanding return man, arguably the top return specialist in this draft. So I think when all is said and done, he's going to come off the board somewhere in that second half of the first round. I think there's just going to be too much uncertainty with his position for him to go in the top half. But I do think he's just too talented of a player to fall out of the first round completely. So, but that's going to be the $64,000 question. It's going to be interesting to watch what he does at the scouting combine. Does he show up? Has he put on weight? Has he slimmed down? Because that's kind of going to give us an indication of what position he and his team thinks he's going to wind up at the next level. If he shows up at 225 pounds, that's going to be pretty obvious that they think he's going to be a linebacker. But regardless of how heavy he is, he's going to run really well. He's going to be a workout warrior. He's going to jump out of the gym. An incredible natural athlete and a terrific football player. Jim Harbaugh can't sing his praises enough. It's just when you're talking about making a top 10, top 15 overall type of investment, I just think you want a little more certainty, whereas Peppers is going to be a bit of a wild card.
I think you might have answered this for Monty, who's our Raiders super fan. Who is the most talented player that's being removed from team draft boards due to character issues? You mentioned Joe Mixon. Is there another guy out there that teams are a little leery on due to his off-field contributions?
Well, the other big name is Chad Kelly, the quarterback from Ole Miss, who, of course, is related to NFL Hall of Famer Jim Kelly. And he was not invited to the NFL scouting combine after the background check they did showed some red flags. So he was uninvited after initially being on the invite list. Also had his senior season cut short by an injury, which didn't help him. Wasn't able to participate in the Senior Bowl. And I think just on the field, Chad Kelly is a day three prospect, and he has early round physical tools in terms of his size, his arm strength, and he shows flashes, but very inconsistent. He's a little bit of a gunslinger. He takes too many chances. I mentioned the durability. He's coming off the injury. And then off the field, he's got numerous character issues, numerous things that have popped up. Nothing necessarily that's completely damning in and of itself. It's just kind of an accumulation with him. And I think he's a player who a lot of people are talked about as maybe being a top 100 pick and maybe being one of the top quarterbacks in this draft. But personally, I don't even have him in my top 15 quarterbacks. I have him well out of the undrafted range when you factor in everything off the field and on the field. So I think that's one player who's very much overrated, and I think the casual observer is going to be pretty surprised to see where he is, or actually probably isn't selected in the NFL draft compared to what they know about his college career.
That's a good transition point, too, because when I originally reached out to you, the idea I had in my head was to talk to you a little bit more about the Combine, since that's coming up next weekend, and sort of what it is that we as fans should be watching. You know, there's obviously people are going to be watching the 40. They're going to be watching the big flashy drills that they always do. But those aren't necessarily the drills that are going to tell us anything about these prospects. What is it that we should be watching as fans as we watch the Combine unfold on the NFL Network?
Well, and of course, the showcase event is the 40-yard dash. And that's fun. And there are some surprising results. But I would estimate that 85 to 90% of the players run right about the range we think they're going to run. There's very few outliers. We already have a pretty good idea of who's fast and who's slow. So not a lot of surprises come from that 40-yard dash. Now, there are some players where that speed is important for them. There are instances where that's maybe the most important aspect of the combine. And every single player in Indianapolis has something they need to answer. It might be speed. It might be agility. It might be off the field. They might have to answer questions concerning something that happened to their past. It might be strength, but every single player has something they want to alleviate concerns about while they're in Indianapolis. And as always, all the focus is on the on-field events, the players actually work it out, but the most important things happen behind the scenes. It's those meeting with the teams. A lot of times this is the first exposure for the decision makers to sit down in a room with these players, look them in the eye, and kind of get a feel for who they are and make a determination whether they want to make a significant investment in this player. And the medical checks behind the scenes as well. A lot of these players have medical issues that could push them way down the draft board. We saw last year two players in Jalen Smith and Miles Jack, who were the two of the top 10 most talented players in the draft, who fell into the second round due to medical concerns. So it's that stuff that happens behind the scenes that's going to be most important. But we don't get to see that. So the focus could be on the field stuff, and we're going to look at who's going to run the fastest, who's going to jump the highest, who's going to do the most bench press reps. But the most important things that happen in Indy go on at night in those meeting rooms.
And we don't normally get to hear or see anything about that sort of stuff, except for things that might leak from time to time about a bad, you know, a bad player test. But even that doesn't necessarily tell you much of anything. Let's jump in here with this question that I've been sitting on. I set you up before we even started the podcast with this question that came from Ben, who's our Browns fan, who wants to know. Well, actually, he told me you've got a pretty strong opinion about the phrase overpaying for a franchise quarterback. You know, I recently did a blog post on what I think Jimmy Garoppolo could bring to the Cleveland Browns. And I honestly used a simulator from Madden 17, which, you know, I can blame the tools on all I want, but that's what I had. And in the simulation, I had to trade both of the Browns' two first rounders to get Jimmy Garoppolo. Now, I agree that that is way too expensive a price for Jimmy Garoppolo, but the results did show back-to-back 7-9 seasons. I think that's a huge improvement for the Cleveland Browns, and they still get the first pick in the second round, and their future draft picks are untouched, which I think is important for a team like the Browns as they're building their franchise. What are your thoughts here about overpaying for a franchise quarterback?
Well, I don't think there's any such thing as overpaying for a franchise quarterback. If you get a franchise quarterback, it was worth what you paid. And if J- Jimmy Garoppolo were to turn into an Aaron Rodgers, a Drew Brees, a top five, top 10 quarterback in the NFL, he's worth both those first round picks and probably a couple more. And you mentioned earlier about the most important quarterback being the most important position in football. I would make an argument it's the most important position in sports. Having a good quarterback doesn't necessarily guarantee that you're going to win, but not having one basically guarantees you're going to lose. And until you have a good quarterback in place, nothing else really matters. So I am a huge proponent of the quarterback position and making a priority. And that's why even when teams do something I disagree with in the draft when it comes to quarterback, I have a hard time getting too mad at them because at least they're trying. I'd rather see a team reach for somebody they have a conviction in, even if it turns out to be Christian Ponder at number 12 overall or whatever the case may be. At least you're trying rather than being in what I like to call quarterback purgatory, where you have Alex Smith as your quarterback, who's just good enough to get you to the playoffs, but you're not going to win a championship with Alex Smith more than likely. So I like it when teams at least try at the quarterback position. And my problem with Garoppolo isn't the draft pick compensation. It's going to be the contract extension. I think that's where I get really reluctant. If it was just a matter of giving up the draft picks, whatever they may be, whether it's a first rounder, whether it's a couple of second rounders, whatever it may be, I think that's tenable. But when you also factor in, are you going to have to give him Brock Osweiler's contract, 70-plus million? That's where I would get a little sketchy. And personally, if I traded for Garoppolo, I'd make him play out his contract and then use that franchise tag if need be. I'd want to see him prove it just in case before I made that long-term commitment. That's probably not going to be the case if and when he gets traded. I'm sure there will be a long-term extension shortly thereafter. But I think the price on Garoppolo, the best-case scenario would be to get the Browns to give up number 12 overall for him. I don't think it's going to happen. I think they're going to end up getting one of those early second-round picks, which was what the Patriots like. They like those second-round picks, second- and third-rounders. And then maybe a future high pick that can upgrade, maybe a number two next year that could upgrade into a one, something of that nature. But personally, for me, given my choice, if I'm the Cleveland Browns, I'd rather take DeShone Kizer at number 12 overall than go out and not only trade for Garoppolo, but give him that huge contract. I just don't think there's a big enough difference between the two to justify the money difference, because the only thing more valuable than a good starting quarterback in the NFL is a good starting quarterback on a rookie contract. That's how the Seattle Seahawks were able to build the team they were, because they had Russell Wilson playing for $500,000 a year, whatever his cap figure was. So I think the money figure is what would make me lean a little bit more towards Kizer. Now, if it's a discussion between Garoppolo and maybe Trubisky or Watson or Pat Mahomes, then I think I'd be a little bit more inclined to maybe make a bigger expenditure on Garoppolo. But that's going to be one of the big storylines in this offseason. I think that's going to be the first domino that we have to see fall in this quarterback derby.
So let me throw two more quarterbacks at you then. Cousins or Romo?
You know, I've always been a fan of Kirk Cousins. Back to when he was coming out of college, I had him as one of the top 50 players in the whole draft. Of course, he fell to the fourth round. I was just stunned that he fell as far as he did. And because not only – I think he has the prerequisite physical tools, but the intangibles are just off the charts with Kirk Cousins. They were back to his college days. He is a leader of men, and I'm a big fan of Kirk Cousins. Is he ever going to be that elite franchise, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning? No, he's not that. But can you win a Super Bowl with him? Could he be Joe Flacco? Sure, I think you can win a Super Bowl with him. But Tony Romo – It's tough because of the durability. How much can you trust him? And I think his best fit would be a place like Denver, where they're ready to win right now, make a Super Bowl run. It's going to be interesting to see where he ends up. I'm sure he'd like to end up with the Houston Texans. That would make a whole lot of sense as well. But I'm not sure that Jerry Jones is going to want to see him end up with an in-state rival. So that's definitely another one of the big quarterback moves we need to see. And then Jay Cutler, where is he going to end up? You hear a lot about New York Jets maybe bringing in a veteran quarterback. Cutler's been mentioned. I think Garoppolo's going to end up, though. He's the first chip, and I think Chicago makes the most sense for him. The Bears have the number 3 overall pick in the draft, but I just don't think either their front office or their coaching staff and John Fox is ready to start all over with a young quarterback. I think they want to start seeing results sooner rather than later. Garoppolo's from that area. I just think that makes the most sense. And really the only team I think that could probably outbid them would be the Cleveland Browns. The Browns have enough draft capital that they can get Garoppolo if they want. It's just a matter of whether they're willing to pay the price.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Jay Cutler because I totally forgot about him. But it's pretty easy to forget about Jay Cutler. Listen, I could talk football with you literally all day long, and I don't want to overstay my welcome here with you. But I will say, you know, we went this whole time. I didn't ask you anything about the number one guy, Myles Garrett. And that's pretty much because, is there anything we don't know yet about Myles Garrett, or that we won't know by the time draft day comes around?
No, he's special. He really is. I think he's the best pass rusher to come along since Julius Peppers. And what separates him from, say, Jadeveon Clowney is Clowney might be a tad more physically talented, although Garrett is no slouch. He is a freakish athlete, tremendous size, long arms, all that stuff. He's going to test off the charts, but the intangibles. You don't question the durability, the desire with Myles Garrett. He has all the intangibles you look for, and not only does he have this incredible talent, the intangibles, but he's already put it all together on a consistent basis throughout his college career against elite college competition in the SEC. So Myles Garrett really is a total package. He's a premium elite prospect at an extremely important position, pass rusher. So he should be the no-brainer number one pick for the Cleveland Browns, and then that's where it gets interesting. Then you have the quarterback discussions beginning with the 49ers at number two, the Browns at number three. The draft really starts at number two this year, I think.
Excellent. Scott, where can people find you?
Yeah, absolutely. The website is draftcountdown.com. I'm going to be updating my rankings, and I'll have a new mock draft coming soon as well. You can follow me on Twitter at Draft Countdown. And then, as you said, the podcast is the Draft Countdown podcast. I've got a new episode coming up later this week with small school prospect extraordinaire Josh Buchanan. He knows guys at Weber State like most people know players at Michigan or USC. He is a wizard when it comes to small school prospects. Now he's going to be on later this week. So lots of fun content coming in the coming months. It's my time of the year.
Awesome. Scott, appreciate you joining us, and we will definitely touch base with you before the draft for sure. And then we will make sure that we schedule in some regular season appearances for you here on the Next Fan Up podcast.
I'd appreciate that anytime.
Scott Wright, draftcountdown.com. It's an excellent site for all you draft nicks out there. You're going to want to check it out. I didn't ask him about his sleepers, and he does have quite a few sleepers, but he mentioned that he has an upcoming podcast all about small school players, and that's usually where you're going to find those sleepers. So you want to check out his podcast, Draft Countdown. You can find it on iTunes, where you can find this show. You can also find it on Stitcher, TuneIn, AHA Radio. Remember, TuneIn, all you have to do is ask Alexa. Alexa will play that podcast for you right there on your Amazon Echo device. Not a lot of news happening right now as we are in that off-season mode for the NFL and teams are preparing for the draft, so we'll be waiting for free agency to get underway in March. The Combine, as I mentioned, starting up next weekend, that'll bring us a little bit more news. You know, Tyrod Taylor's been cleared medically after surgery on his groin. That's good news for him, good news for his paycheck. We'll see if the Buffalo Bills decide to keep him around. Report out there that the Bears are now actively seeking a trade of Jay Cutler, whom we mentioned there in my interview with Scott Wright. In the words of Jay Cutler, good luck. Let's see what else. There's really not a lot of other things going on. The Dolphins have been making some moves. They're clearly getting themselves ready to try and improve their team here in the offseason. That's what we're all about. We, the fans, are going to be watching what these teams are doing right now extremely closely, and we will let you know if we think that the moves they're doing are actually for the better or for the worse. And I think Andy, our Dolphins fan, who was on this show last week, mentioned that some of the moves are for the worse for the Miami Dolphins. And as an AFC East fan, I would have to agree with Andy. Who am I to say, though? Hey, I could be completely wrong. If I am, let me know. Send an email to nextfanup@gmail.com. And you can always tweet us
at NFU Podcast. We want to hear from you, have your questions. I can ask your questions to guests like Scott Wright, so that you can have those questions answered. If you've got questions, we've got answers. NextFanUp@gmail.com or tweet us at NFU Podcast. And of course, you can always check out what we've got going on at the website, nextfanup.wordpress.com. You can still read my article about how I improved the Cleveland Browns by trading their first two first-round picks for Jimmy Garoppolo. Of course, I did a whole heck of a lot else besides just Jimmy Garoppolo on the Cleveland Browns. If you want to check out what I did, just go to the website, nextfanup.wordpress.com. Check out our latest articles, and you'll see Making the Browns Great Again for the first time. And yes, I was trolling the Cleveland Browns on purpose. With that, I will troll Jeff Fisher continuously. There you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, this game is four quarters long.